Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is June 3rd. We're in Shmuel Beis, and we are beginning Perek Yud Ches, chapter 18. So David's men have been sustained by the people who came and helped them out. And now David is ready to prepare for war with the forces of Avshalom. Vayifko David es ha'am asher ito. David, vayifko could mean he counted, but it really means he appointed. He set up. He arranged the nation that was with him. Vayasam aleim sari alafim sari meos, and he put upon them officers of thousands, officers of hundreds. So he set them up into a military company, so that the people were set up in a way that they could now wage war in an effective and organized manner. Vayishalach David es ha'am. David sent the nation. This is to fight. Hashlishis biyad Yoav. One third was in the hands of Yoav, meaning he was going to lead one third of the group. Vashlishis biyad Avishai ben Tsruya achi Yoav, and a third was in the hands of Avishai ben Tsruya, the brother of Yoav. Vashlishis biyad Itai Hagiti, and the third was in the hands of Itai Hagiti. Vayomer HaMelech al Ha'am, and the king said to the nation, Yatso Eitse Gamani Imachem, I will also go out with you. Before we read any further, I just want to emphasize the fact that when Avishai ben Tsruya is mentioned as in charge of the second third, the Navi chooses to tell us that he is the brother of Yoav. This is not necessary. We already know. First of all, we know that Tsruya is Yoav's mother. So if Avishai is the son of Tsruya, he's obviously Yoav's brother. And anyway, we already knew that they were brothers. It would seem to me that the Navi is emphasizing this because Yoav is a given that he is a great general in war. And the Navi is trying to tell us Avishai is the brother of Yoav. Just as Yoav is great in battle, so is Avishai. But Yoav is the standard. If you measure everybody up to Yoav, Yoav is the greatest. And if you measure up to Yoav, then you're pretty good. So David says, I'm going to go out with you. Vayomer ha'am, the nation said, Lo seitse, do not go out. Ki imnos nanus, because if we run away, meaning if we have to run away, if we lose the battle, lo yasimu eleinu lev, they won't put any heart to us. We're not so important to them. Vimyamusu chetzienu, and if half of us are killed, lo yasimu eleinu lev, they will not put any heart to us. Meaning, again, it's not going to mean that much. Ki ata chamonu asara alafim, for you, for now, like us, you are 10,000. So you are worth 10,000 as many as we are. Ve'ata tov, and now it is good, it is better, kisiyalanu me'ir lazor, that you will be for us in the city to help. So better you should stay back and help, and that'll be better for us. Our sages tell us, Chazal say, how is it better for them that David remain in the city to help? I understand that he's not a liability if he comes out. Mm-hmm. That's what they're telling him. But they're saying more than that. They're saying, in fact, you'll do more for us in the city than you would if you came out. So Chazal tell us that if you remain back in the city, or the encampment, whatever that means, and you daven for us, then you will be a greater help. Better that we should have the assistance of your davening, because when you're at battle, you can't daven, you're battling. But if you'll remain back and you daven for us, that is what will enable us to win the battle. Vayomar aleihem ha'melech, the king said to them, Mashiyitav ve'eneichem ha'eseh, what is good in your eyes I will do. Vayamod ha'melech al yad ha'shar, the king stood on the side of the gate. He stepped aside. V'chol ha'am yatzu l'meos v'la'alafim, and all the nation went out in their hundreds and in their thousands. So now he's sending out a fighting force, but he is remaining back in the city. Now, this remaining back in the city dramatically changes a very, very important factor in this battle, and it will become the focal point of the battle. And that is the next pasuk. Vayitzav ha-melech es Yoav ves Avishai ves Itai, lemor. The king commanded the three generals, Yoav, Avishai, and Itai, saying, La'at li lanar la'avshalom. Be gentle for me, for the lad, for Avshalom. Meaning, don't kill him. Bring him back. Bring him back. Be gentle with him. I want him back. This is not a king saying, I want him alive, which usually means so that I can interrogate or torture him. Right? That's not what it means here. Here it means, I want him to live. V'chol ha'am shamu b'tzavos ha'melech. And the whole nation heard when the king commanded, es kol hasarim, all of the officers, al dvar Avshalom, about the matter of Avshalom. Had David gone out to war with them, he would have been on the battlefield, and it would not have necessarily been so important that he command this. He would have had command of the forces at war. And therefore, the Avshalom being targeted, being within the sights of those who are fighting, would have been a major aspect of the battle. If you capture their leader, then you finish off the battle. So had David been in the field at battle, he most definitely would have been informed of the sighting of Avshalom long before anybody had a chance to actually attempt to kill him. And David would have been in control of what was going to be their strategy when they have a chance, if they have a chance, to capture or kill or chase away Avshalom. And David would have been in the thick of things. But now that David is remaining back, he has to entrust his three generals, and therefore he has to give very explicit instructions, and everybody hears the instructions to be gentle with Avshalom. Vayetze ha'am ha'sadeh likras Yisrael, and the nation went out to the field to battle, to go against the Jew Yisrael. We're now going to use the word Yisrael to refer to Avshalom's forces, whereas David's forces will be referred to as the servants of David. Similar to when the country splits in half in Malachim, in the Book of Kings, we're going to find that the southern kingdom is called Malchus Yehuda, the kingdom of Yehuda, whereas the northern kingdom is called Malchus Yisrael. Yisrael just means everybody other than Yehuda. What's that?
Else.
Everybody else, right. Here as well, Yisrael refers to everybody but those who are supporting David. So the nation, meaning David's people, went out to, it literally means to greet, but it means to fight against Yisrael. Vatiya milchama biyar Ephraim, and the war took place in the forest of Ephraim. This is a very difficult statement because the battle, as we learned before, is taking place on the other side of the Jordan River, on the east bank of the Jordan River. Ephraim did not have territory in the east bank of the Jordan River. Ephraim was located on the west bank of the Jordan River. On the east bank, you only had Reuven and Gad and half of the tribe of Manasseh. But you had no land owned by Ephraim. So how does Ephraim have a forest or trees on the east bank of the Jordan River? Now, the truth is, the word Ya'ar, even though we say it means a forest, the reason why we say it means a forest is because in modern Hebrew it means a forest. And the reason why I say it means a forest is because in the Chumash, it says that if I'm talking about a man who kills someone else negligently, so it talks about a man going out to chop wood and inadvertently kills somebody. So it says he goes to a ya'ar lachtov etzim. He goes to a ya'ar to cut wood. So presumably there are trees in a ya'ar. And a ya'ar is different than a sada. Sada is a field. A ya'ar connotes trees. but I'm not sure that it means a thick jungle. It just means that there are trees in the area. It's a forested area, not necessarily a thick jungle, but a forested area. It's not an open field, and that's where the battle took place. Vayinagfu sham am Yisrael lifnei avdei David, and the nation of Yisrael were beaten or were
smitten.
Smitten. There, in front of the servants of David, vatiyisham amagefa gedola bayomahu, and the casualties were very great on that day. Esrim, all of 20,000 soldiers were killed. Vatisham hamilchama nafotzes al pnei chol haaretz, and the battle was there, spread out over the entire land. Vayerev hayar lechol ba'am, and the forest did more to consume the nation. Ma'asher achla hacherev, from what the sword consumed by Omahu on that day. As Rashi explains, the wild animals that were in the forest also contributed to the decimation of the Yisrael army. So clearly you have some divine intervention here, that not only do David's forces win militarily, but they have the assistance of the lions, tigers, and bears. Oh my.
So you're in Israel, so there's no lions. I mean, there's no tigers.
Oh, there are lions.
There are no tigers.
There's lions, there's bears.
There's wolves.
And it probably also means snakes.
Can I ask one question? Are the 20,000 necessarily casualties on Avshalom's side?
Not necessarily. It may mean total, but it's certainly the bulk of it is Avshalom's side.
How can you count that many?
What's that?
Who sits there and counts them?
Yeah, okay. I mean, first of all, the Navi may just know, and second of all, they may have counted after the war, and they got to bury the dead.
Yeah. Well, most of them are consumed by animals. How do they know?
Well, consumed animals doesn't have to mean... Here, the word consumed doesn't mean literally eaten. Consumed here means killed, just like the sword consumes.
And there'd still be stuff left.
Yeah, all right.
There's a lot of people in the
world. Yeah. Now, I want to comment about this Ya'ar Ephraim, this forest of Ephraim. Aside from the fact that it seems superfluous to mention it to us, first we have to figure out why does it say what forest of Ephraim? Okay, let's deal with that first, then we'll say how it really, there's no reason for it to tell it to us. But we also need to deal with this because there's an emphasis on where this battle happened. Both after Pasuk Vav, after the verse 6 says where it happened in the forest of Ephraim, then in Pasuk Zayin and in Pasuk Ches, 7 and 8, it says there. They were smitten there, and the battle was there. Shum. The word shum, there. I mean, where else were they? So the Navi feels it is important to emphasize to us where this battle happened and to continually emphasize it as he tells us the story. That it happened there. Where's there? In the forest of Ephraim, which is on the east side of the Yarden of the Jordan River, which needs explanation. In addition, we see that the wild beasts of the forest helped defeat Avshalom's forces. But notice, it doesn't say in the pasuk, in the verse, it doesn't say that the wild beasts consumed more than the sword. It says the forest consumed more than the sword, and we are expected to understand that connotes the wild beasts of that forest. So clearly this forest is being emphasized as being a factor in this battle.
Maybe
so
the tree branches came in strong.
Yeah. Okay.
So famous movie.
So the Gemara tells us that the Medrash, I think, tells us another one. The Medrash tells us that how is it that Ephraim has a forest on this side of the river when Yehoshua entered Eretz Yisrael and they conquered it and they gave out the land. Yehoshua made a pact with all of the Jewish people, and he enacted 10 decrees, 10 things that were agreed upon by all of the Jewish people, that these would be the ground rules for living in Eretz Israel. All of the tribes agreed to these 10 things. And they all have to do with how to set up a society that functions appropriately within the boundaries of Eretz Israel. They're not Torah laws, but they are rules that everybody agreed to abide by. They would now be the default as far as legal action in these areas. One of the rules that Yehoshua enacted is that people who have land, which is all the Jewish people have land, have to allow the animals of everybody else to graze uninhibited. That animals can graze wherever they wish. That doesn't mean that you have to let the animals in to graze the land that you've planted. You can fence the land that you've planted. But if you have grazing land, other people's animals are allowed to wander onto your grazing land and eat of your grazing land. And your animals can wander and eat of other people's grazing land. Yehoshua made it that grazing was not going to be something that was territorial. It was going to be open to everybody. And therefore, what this means is, although Ephraim did not have land on this side of the river, on the east side of the river, but Ephraim's land was on the west side of the river, and it bordered on the river. He had a significant swath of land that ran up to the bank of the Yarden, of the Jordan River, on the west side of the river. So the shepherds of Ephraim, in looking for grazing land, not only grazed in their own land, but since Yehoshua made it an open thing, it was natural that they would gravitate even to cross the river into the east side of the river and graze there. And therefore, that area was known as the forested area of Ephraim. It's because Ephraim's shepherds were often found there with their flocks grazing in that land, even though that land did not belong to Ephraim. And that is where this battle took place. So it's a nice explanation, but it begs the question, so why do we care? So fine. So Ephraim had this land that, it's not his land, but it grazed there. Now, another thing you should know about Ephraim is the tribe of Yehoshua. It is the tribe of Yehoshua. He comes from Ephraim. Ephraim is also the leader of Malchus Yisrael. Later on, when there's going to be a split in the kingdom, so the one who splits the kingdom is going to be Yeravam ben Nevat. He's going to be the first of the Israel kings, meaning in contrast to the Yehuda kings. He's going to be the northern kingdom. Yeravam ben Nevat is also from Ephraim. Ephraim being the main Shevet of Yosef. The truth is, in certain areas, Menasheh was the main one. In certain areas, Ephraim was the main one. But Yosef, when you contrast the two kingdoms, Yehuda is in charge of one, Yosef is in charge of the other one, and Ephraim represents Yosef. The nevuah we had of Yechezkel, one of the things that he has a nevuah about for the future this is one of the haftaras that we have in the Chumash, is that he takes two branches, one that represents the southern kingdom, one represents the northern kingdom, and he puts them together and they become one branch to show that there will be unity in the future. But it's called one is called Beis Yehuda and one is called Beis Ephraim. Those Ephraim represents the northern kingdom. Havein Yakir Li Ephraim, we say it on Rosh Hashanah. The precious child Ephraim. Ephraim refers to all the Jewish people when it's in certain contexts. So that's another thing you should know about Ephraim. Finally, Yosef's children, it says in Yehoshua, they came and they said that we're too many people, not enough people for the land. So Yehoshua told them to... not enough land for the people. Oh. Thank you. And Yehoshua told them that you should go into the forest, the Yar. So Chazal tell us that the conversation wasn't exactly the way it seems. What was actually being said is this. They were saying they have so many people, and Yehoshua told them if you have so many people, then in order that you should not create an ayin hara, you shouldn't create an evil eye, people will get jealous, you should hide yourselves in the forest. Meaning, don't make it obvious. You should blend in. Now, Avshalom, we learned about him before. Does anybody remember what Chazal tell us were the main faults of Avshalom? I mean, he rebelled against his father, but that didn't happen in a vacuum. He had certain faults that weren't addressed, and they got worse and worse, and as a result, he ended up rebelling against his father. But he demonstrated certain faults. So one is gaiva, haughtiness. His hair, his beautiful hair, and it made him think very highly of himself. That was one. And there was something else.
Well, he stole the hearts of the people.
Stole the hearts of the people and of David and of the Sanhedrin. We're going to see later that because he stole three hearts, he's going to be punished in a triple way. We'll see that later on. And we also saw something else. A combination of haughtiness and theft meant that he had, remember? He had no regard for the property of others. And remember what he did? He wanted to get Yoav's attention. And Yoav, he was trying to get Yoav to go to him on behalf of him to plead his case to the king. Yoav didn't want to go. So Avshalom, to get Yoav's attention, what did he do? He burned down the field of Yoav. We pointed out at the time that Avshalom had no regard for other people's property. Avshalom felt that he's entitled to do as he wishes with other people's property. He stole. He's a thief. He's haughty. There are no boundaries. Remember, we talked about how Yoav is the antithesis of that. That Yoav, whatever issues Yoav has, as we talked about, but Yoav's house was, the Gemara tells us, absolutely nucky, totally clean from two things. From arayos, from illicit relationships, and from gezel, and from theft. And he was a big bal chesed. He was a very great, generous person. And Yoav was absolutely careful with the property of others. Avshalom was the antithesis of that. In the complex relationship between Yoav and Avshalom, and here we're going to see Yoav is actually going to be the one to kill Avshalom after Yoav pleaded Avshalom's case, but where they are literally night and day is in this arena. The arena of respect for other people's property. Avshalom has none. Avshalom is just the opposite. He feels entitled to other people's property, whereas Yoav has absolute respect for other people's property. He never even comes close to crossing that line of taking liberty with other people's property. Yehoshua comes into Eretz Yisrael, and he needs to make rules that will enable the Jewish people to have a functioning society. The rules, of course, need to not just fit into the Torah, but they need to enable the keeping of the Torah. But nevertheless, they are not Torah laws. the rules that he put in place. And they become the default legal system. Obviously, the legal system is the Torah, but they become the parameters, the social parameters, or perhaps the financial parameters that are going to govern how the new country of Israel is going to be run. And Yahushua says, we're going to drop the fences when it comes to grazing animals. Why does Yahushua do that? What's the reason to do that?
Well, if you drop the border for grazing, it makes more warm the relationship between all the tribes.
Okay. So you're saying it brings people closer together because there's no sense of this is my land, this is your land, I can't go. Right?
It reduces machlokes.
Okay.
And also, it's all Hashem's land, really.
Okay, so it emphasizes the point it's all Hashem's land. Okay. Now, we know that the statement goes, and it's a very true statement, good fences make good neighbors.
Right.
When you don't have fences, then that's when you have machlokas. Mm-hmm. When you break down fences, actually promote shalom, not walls. Not walls where you're cut off from each other, but fences where I know what's mine, I know what I have rights to, and you know what's yours, and you know what you have rights to. That enables us to get along. When it's blurry, when the lines are blurry, that's where you get into machlokes, because then I feel you overstepped your bounds, you feel I overstepped my bounds, I stepped on your toes, you stepped on my toes, I ruffled your feathers, you ruffled my feathers, right? We know this is true not just when it comes to financial issues and literally property issues, but it's true in any kind of organization when you divide responsibilities with clear boundaries over who's responsible for what, then you don't have territorial issues. Why? Because you have a clear boundary. When the boundaries aren't clear, that's when things become difficult. That's when you have a lack of shalom. So Yahushua's breaking down the fences, don't you think that would actually increase strife rather than decrease it?
No, I think it goes back to Dina's point, because the land belongs to Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's a gift for you.
Okay, so you're saying people will remember this way that it is not mine, it is Hashem's. Right. Okay?
I think on a very simple level, not a cosmic level, flocks and herds have to move to where the food is, and their territory is so varied in Eretz Yisrael that in order for the nation to survive, the flocks have got to be able to move. The avos moved around a lot.
Okay, so you're just saying, practically speaking,
it's on a low level,
to expect the herds to remain in one place is impractical.
And we saw that in our own country, in the West, the determination not to fence in grazing land. So this is just a very economic reason.
Okay. I want to suggest to you that Yahushua's breaking down the fence in this case actually promotes shalom and brotherhood.
Which is what you were
saying. But we have to understand why. The reason why, when there's no fence, then it creates machlokas, is because when there's no fence, then the terms aren't clear. I have certain expectations, you have certain expectations, we've never hammered them out. And therefore, we will necessarily be stepping on each other's toes, on each other's property, and in each other's territory. Whatever it is, because we never got clear what are the terms. But if you make the term clear, that the term is that everybody can go everywhere, that is a boundary. That is in itself a boundary. Meaning, it's not a boundary in the sense that it hems people in, but it is a very clear rule that I have rights to your land, and you have rights to my land. Then it's not wishy-washy, it's not fuzzy, and therefore there's no expectation that you stay off my land, I stay off your land. Therefore, it works as long as it's set up clearly. So Yehoshua could have left it at the status quo, which is you build fences and you keep your grazing, your animals in your land. That's what he could have done. Instead, he said, I'm going to make it very clear right now. There are no fences when it comes to grazing. Now it's clear. So no one can have any complaints. And therefore, there are no expectations that people keep their herds to themselves. And as a result, there is shalom. Okay. But again, why did he do it? Now we can say he did it, you can say, to emphasize the fact that it's everybody's land, because it's economically practical. You can say that it promotes brotherhood. But you, what I'm saying is, you just first have to deal with, why doesn't it create machlokas? The answer is, the reason why it doesn't create machlokas is because it is a clear guideline. It isn't blurry. Ephraim, which Yehoshua is from, who is themselves the leader of the Jewish people outside of David. That is, if you go away from David HaMelech, if you need another leader, who's the other leader? Ephraim. We have Mashiach ben David. We have Mashiach ben Yosef. Whatever, whoever it is, however that's going to work, we don't really know. But there is the concept of the leadership of Yosef, slash meaning Ephraim, when you're not under the leadership of David. Even though Avshalom is a son of David, but here he's being referred to as Am Yisrael, just as later Ephraim's children will be referred to as Yisrael. Why? Because you're not David. So if you're not David, you're Yisrael. That means you are in the role of Ephraim. Ephraim here, under Yehoshua, is representative not of no respect for other people's property, but of the utmost respect of other people's property, to the extent that Yehoshua wanted it to be crystal clear that others can graze on other people's property. Because if you don't have that rule, then you can't. You can't just let your animals graze on other people's property. What is Avram Avinu known for? The fight between Avram and Lot? Right. He muzzled his animal. Because you can't let it happen. Yehoshua understood that. Therefore, he had to make it very clear at the outset. We don't have a boundary. We don't have a fence when it comes to grazing. The very lack of the fence emphasizes the respect that everybody has for everybody else's property. More than that, it's only in regard to grazing that there's no fences. But for other things, of course there are fences. By having one thing that's permitted, that actually magnifies, it accentuates that which is prohibited. Because this is okay, but that's not. You can't just go put your mill in my property. It's my property, right? So this Ya'ar Ephraim, which is on the other side of the Jordan River, it harkens back when they enter the place known as Ya'ar Ephraim. Anybody going in there, knowing that it was known as Ya'ar Ephraim, and they're not in Ephraim's territory, will immediately realize that this is a function of that rule of Yehoshua, which is an emphasis on respect for other people's property. Therefore, the battle happens there. Therefore, the Ya'ar itself contributes to the decimation of Avshalom, because Avshalom represents no respect for anybody's property. Avshalom represents no boundaries at all, no need to make any rules, because anything goes. Theft, I'll take what I want. You have something that I want, I'll take it. I want to get your attention, I'll burn your field down. That's Avshalom. And so this battle takes place in the Ya'ar Ephraim, specifically, and the Navi wants to emphasize that. They were smitten there. The battle happened there. The forest itself contributed to the defeat of Avshalom. Pasuk Tes, verse 9. Vayikare Avshalom lifnei avdei David. So now Avshalom becomes, he happens in front of the servants of David, which means he has been discovered. Avshalom rochev al hapered. Avshalom was riding on the on the mule, right? Vayavo hapered tachas sovech ha'ela hagedola, and the mule came under the branch of a large branch of a tree. Vayechazak rosho va'ela, and his head got caught in that branch, in that tree, because his hair got caught in the tree. Vayutan bein ha-shamayim v'bein ha-aretz, he was placed between the heavens and the earth, which means he was now suspended in midair. Vahaperet asher tachtav avar, and the mule that was under him kept on going. So he got stuck in this tree, and now he's dangling from the tree by his hair.
Which is a very concrete example of the forest itself.
Yes.
Contributing
yes.
to the outcome of this battle.
The branches reach down and grab
okay.
them.
Okay. The Gemara tells us, Avshalom was chote besaro. He sinned with his hair, and therefore he is punished here with his hair. The Gemara tells us that Avshalom immediately pulled out his sword in order to cut himself loose. And he looked down and he saw Gehenim opened up beneath him. That if he would cut himself loose, he would tumble right into Gehenim. Now, obviously, Gehenim, what does that mean? He saw whatever it means that he saw beneath him, but he was unable to cut himself loose, not because he physically couldn't do it, but because he was afraid to do it. He saw that he was finished. Now, on a deeper level, he saw, finally, that he was in big trouble, that he was headed for Gehenim. That means that Avshalom, at the moment that he is really about to be killed, finally realizes that he's in big trouble, that he has rebelled against Hashem. He sees it now. So, what happens? Vayar ish echad, a man saw this, vayaged liyov, and he told Yoav. Vayomer, he said, hinei ro'isi es Avshalom talui bo'ayla, I saw Avshalom hanging from the branch, from the tree. Vayomer Yoav lo'ish ha'magid lo, Yoav said to the man who told him, vihinei ro'isa, behold, you saw umadua lo hikiso shamarza. Why didn't you strike him down there to the, strike him down there to the ground? Why didn't you kill him? V'alai lasas l'cha asere asara chesef v'chagor ha'echas. I would have given you 10 silver coins and a belt. In other words, I would have rewarded you for this act of killing Avshalom. Now, Yoav knows full well that everybody was told not to kill him. But Yoav doesn't even acknowledge that. He just says, why didn't you kill him? As if it's obvious. Of course you should kill him. What's the question over here? Yud Beis 12, Vayomer Ha'isha Yoav, the man said to Yoav, Thulu Anochi Shokel Al Kapay Elef Kesef, even if I would hold in my hands 1,000 silver coins, Lo Eshlach Yadi Al Ben HaMelech, I'm not going to send my hand against the son of the king, Ki Ve'ozneinu Tziva HaMelech Oscha, Ves Avishai, Ves Itai Lein, wherefore, in our ears, the king commanded you, and Avishai, and Itai, saying, Shimru Mi Banar Be'Avshalom, guard anybody who comes across the lad of Shalom, meaning don't kill him. O asisi v'nafshi sheker, or if I would have killed him, I would have to make with my soul a lie, meaning I would have to say that I didn't do it. V'chol davar lo yikachei min ha-melech, but all matters are not hidden from the king. Eventually he would find out that it was me. V'atat yisad save me negin, you Yoav, you would stand on the side. I would get thrown under the bus. I take the rap for killing him, and you would be off scot-free. You wanted me to kill him, but then I'm going to take the blame, and you're going to go off free. Vayomer Yoav, Yoav said, Lo chein ochila lefanecha. Not so, I ask of you. Meaning, I don't ask of you that you should put yourself out and get thrown under the bus. I'll take care of this. Vayikach shlosha shevatim b'chapo. He took 3 staffs in his hand. Why 3? That's what I was talking about before, because it's a 3-pronged punishment for having stolen 3 hearts. Vayiska'im b'lev Avshalom, and he drove them into the heart of Avshalom. Odenu chai, while he was still alive, b'lev ha'elah, in the heart of the tree. the word heart is being emphasized here. This is the first time we've mentioned the heart of the tree. We mentioned before the branch of the tree, but we're talking, the heart means like the main part of the tree, but he drove these stakes, these into his heart while he was alive into the heart of the tree. But that didn't kill him. Vayasobu asara ne'arim, and 10 lads, yisobu means they came around. Nosei klei Yoav, those who carried the arms of Yoav, they were the arms bearers of Yoav. He has 10 lads who do this. Vayaku es Avshalom, they struck Avshalom, vayimisu, and they killed him. And that is the end of Avshalom. The Gemara tells us why 10 lads? Because Avshalom was ba'al asara pilakshe aviv, because he had a relationship with the 10 pilakshem of his father, which was gilui arayos, that was immorality, and here he is being punished for that immorality. Vayiska Yoav bashofar, and Yoav blew the shofar. Vayoshav ha'am merdov achar Yisrael, and the nation returned from chasing after Yisrael, chasing after Avshalom's people. Ki chasach Yoav es ha'am, for Yoav has now stopped the nation. Yoav, now with the death of Avshalom, there's no need for any more bloodshed. It's over. The protagonist is dead. We don't need to deal with him anymore. And the rebellion is finished. We're done. And you can come home. Vayikhu es Avshalom. They took Avshalom. Vayashlichu oso vayar. And they threw him in the forest. El hapachas hagadol, to the great ditch. There was a great ditch. They threw him into the ditch. Vayatzivu alav gal avonim gadol ma'od, and they put upon him a pile of stones very great, because this way everybody would know. It was a way of announcing. There was no CNN to announce the death of Avshalom. They had to have some way for the word to get around. So they put this huge pile of stones. It became very obvious that he was killed. V'chol Yisrael nasu ish la'ahalo, and all the Jews ran. They ran away, each man to his tent. That was the end of the rebellion, or at least almost the end. We'll see. That's not quite over, but it's basically over.
Can I ask a question here?
Let me just read one more pasuk. Hold on. Avshalom lakach. Avshalom had taken. Vayatzev lo v'chayav es matzeves asher b'mechamelch. And he had established in his lifetime a monument that was in the valley of the king. He had put up this monument. Ki Amar, for he had said, Ein li vein, I don't have any sons. Bavur has kir shmi, that my name should be known. Vayikra la matzeves al shemo, and the monument was called on his name. Vayikare la Yad Avshalom, and it was called Yad Avshalom ad hayom hazeh, until today. This seems to be a non sequitur. So. On a practical level, just a simple level, the reason why this is told for us is because eventually they exhumed the body from the ditch in the forest, and they buried him at Yad Avshalom. That's the simple reason.
What is Yad?
Yad literally means the hand, but it means place. The place, or the that which he did of Avshalom. So that's why it's mentioned over here. But there's more to it. So let me take some questions, and then we have some things to discuss before we run out of time. We'll take a few questions now.
So all of Israel fled to his tents. Are we using Israel in the same sense to mean Avshalom's army, or all the Jewish people who were at battle?
It seems here we mean Avshalom's army. That's what it seems.
And given that...
Because it says fled. Yoav's men wouldn't have fled.
Okay, but David's men would not feel that they were going to get into big trouble.
So we're gonna discuss. That's gonna be. We're not gonna get to all of that tonight, but we're gonna have a very interesting debate over what happens next.
And lastly, referring to that, is that a medrash that says Avshalom saw Gehenna beneath him?
The Gemara says it.
Yeah. Okay. So, is the implication that he had time to do tshuva?
Okay. Okay, so the big question here is, why does Yoav kill Avshalom?
Right.
It would be short-sighted and superficial to say that he didn't like him.
Right.
because we're going to see, the truth is, it would be, we'd be able to deal with this more if we read a little further, but I want to give just a little bit of perspective now. Next week, Mitzvah Hashem, when we deal with this in more detail with what happens next, we'll see that there was a basic disagreement between Yoav and David, which we've seen before about this. Both arguments have merit. But I want to point out to you that it can't be he just didn't like him, because of the way that he speaks to the soldier who tells him about the discovery of Avshalom dangling from the tree. He says, why didn't you kill him? If Yoav had a personal vendetta against Avshalom, he would have acknowledged that the soldier can't know that. The soldier is going to follow David's orders. Everybody heard David's orders. And therefore, it doesn't make sense for him to say to the soldier, why didn't you kill him? What do you mean? You forgot? I mean, David just, right? So it must be that Yoav had a rationale that he held was obvious. Mm-hmm. Was obvious. Mm-hmm. That he's not the crazy one. That it makes sense. Of course you kill Avshalom. Yes, I understand what David said. And we can expect David to say that. Mm-hmm. But obviously you kill Avshalom. What's the question? So whatever rationale we're going to give for Avshalom, it has to be something that, it has to be something that Yoav could reasonably expect others to have figured out. Which means we can figure it out too. Because we're not talking about only the great ones. We're talking about the rank and file of the army. He expects them to understand that you're supposed to kill Avshalom when you find him. There is an opinion in the Gemara that Avshalom lost his portion in the world to come. We're going to see later, though, that that's not so simple. We're going to discuss that later on. The fact is that that Avshalom gets killed midah keneged midah, measure for measure. First, his hair gets hung up. Then, 3 stakes in his heart for being a thief in 3 ways. And then, 10 lads strike him because of the Gilui Arayos. Because of the... And he does see Gehenna beneath him. Does Yoav know, when Yoav takes 3 staffs and drives them into the heart of Avshalom, is that just coincidental that Yoav happened to take 3 staffs, and the Gemara tells us, you want to know why God put in Yoav's head 3? In order that should be midah keneged midah, measure for the 3 hearts that he stole. Or is Yoav doing this premeditatively? That he says, I'm going to use 3 because he stole 3 hearts. On a practical level, if there's a rebellion and the head of the rebellion is captured, how do you end this rebellion?
Kill him.
You kill him. As long as he's alive, there's always people who want to spring him loose.
Right.
And let's keep it going. Right? Once you kill him, it's over. There's nothing to talk about. It makes political sense, military sense, to kill Avshalom. And I'll prove it to you. After Avshalom is killed, Yoav blows the shofar. Okay, that's it. There's no need to fight anymore. Everybody go home. You could argue Yoav was simply stopping the bloodshed.
Mm-hmm.
Yoav may have felt it was irresponsible for David to keep Avshalom alive because that means the battle wages on and more people are being killed. 20,000 casualties already. Do they have to be more casualties? So you can't put the needs of Avshalom over all the people who might get killed by leaving Avshalom alive. That could be where Yoav was coming from. And that would be in character for Yoav. Yoav is the general of the war. Yoav is responsible for the people. And Yoav understands this is a civil war. Both sides are Jewish casualties. We're not interested in that. And that in and of itself is a very strong argument, which means that David's rationale is going to have to somehow answer or at least counter this rationale. But I want to suggest to you something else. It is possible that Yoav wants to kill Avshalom for the same reason that ultimately David is going to want to kill Yoav. Remember, David's going to have Shlomo
kill Yoav.
Right. Why does he have Shlomo kill Yoav? To keep Yoav out of Gehenna. That's why he has Shlomo do it.
Oh, yeah.
He says, don't let him die a natural death and fall into Gehenna. Yoav may have had the same intentions with Avshalom. Avshalom has Gehenna open beneath him. Avshalom's in big trouble. Yoav was not nearly as bad as Avshalom. Yoav did a couple things wrong. Yoav was a huge tzaddik. He was a huge tzaddik, a big Talmud Chacham. Yoav did not, no one suggests, God forbid, that Yoav lost his portion. Yoav was a huge tzaddik. He was of the great ones. There were a couple of things he did wrong. Avshalom, Gilui, Arayas, Gezel, Gaiva, rebellion. I mean, he's real trouble over here. Yoav may have held that it is critical for Avshalom's sake that he not die a natural death, that he atone for his sins now. And therefore, he specifically took 3 stakes to drive into his heart and specifically instructed his 10. Why didn't he finish the job? But he had his 10 lads kill him. Yoav says, I'm going to take responsibility for this. He tells the soldier, I'm not making you do this. I'll take responsibility for it. And he goes and he kills Avshalom. But he doesn't really kill him. He almost kills him. I imagine he would have been killed. He would have died from what Yoav did. But he was still breathing. He was still alive. And Yoav has his lads kill him. Why? Why not Yoav do it himself? So the Gemara says, why 10 lads? To make up for the 10 Pilagshim. It could very well be Yoav was thinking that too. Yoav, in his level of scholarship, may have already intuited this, that there needs to be a Mida Keneged Mida. He's hanging by his hair. That makes sense. I'm going to take 3 stakes. It makes sense. And I'm going to send my 10 lads. That makes sense.
We have to go back to Dr. Farhi's, which she brought up about Shiva. Even Korach's sons were swallowed up and they did Shiva. They married a coming out. So, why did he have to be the judge, jury, and executioner? Why didn't he give the opportunity for Avshalom to do tshuva?
Tshuva is not something that we can judge. When a court of law based in rules that someone has to be killed, the person can do all the tshuva he wants. He's still going to get killed. Mm-hmm. Only Hashem can do that. When a person is chayev to be punished from Hashem, God forbid, Hashem takes into account tshuva. But we can't.
I see.
Human beings have to deal with the law.
Okay.
But here, Avshalom may have, again, it could be a combination of all of these things. And he may have held that this is the way to stop the bloodshed, but he may have also decided to do this in a way where there's going to be a mida keneged mida, measure for measure, in order to prevent Avshalom from really ending up in Gehenna after he is killed.
But isn't the way this works that even in Gehenna, it only lasts for a certain amount of time. You get purified in Gehenna, and then after that...
It depends on the person. That's what we say is true for most people. We presume that is true for most people. And that's why Kaddish is only said for 11 months.
Right.
But someone who is a Rasha Gamor, a complete evil person, then it's much worse than that. For them, the Pasuk says, Ki salatam... Lo samus v'isham lo sichbe. their worms will not die, meaning they'll constantly be eaten by worms, and their fire will not be extinguished.
So when we say that a person has lost their portion in the world to come, does this mean that they go on forever in Gehenna, or they're simply obliterated?
Okay, that's a good question, and I don't have a full answer for you. However, we are going to explore that a little bit further. I think we'll get to it next week. But when we get to David's reaction, the next thing is, what do they do next on the battlefield? What do they do next? Mm-hmm. Then we have David's reaction to the news of Avshalom's death. Yeah. And when we get to that, which we may get to next week or maybe in the second session from now, then we're going to discuss at least a little bit about what it means to lose the world to come versus Gehenna. Like, how do we? I'm not an expert on the subject. I don't, you know. But we're going to try our best to cover that.
I still didn't quite get why, if Avshalom had a chance to calm himself down. I mean, if there was enough time, I don't really understand why he didn't do it. If I saw Gehenna, and he figured I'd better die instead of.
So, as I'm saying, there's two. The Gemara says he saw Gehenna underneath him. So, the simple meaning we say is he saw this deep pit beneath him, and if he would have cut himself, he would have fallen into Gehenna. But we know that Gehenna is not. I mean, it may be physical, but it doesn't just, a person doesn't just fall in there. They have to deserve to fall in there. So he saw Gehenna, it means he recognized that he did something wrong. Right. Otherwise, he wouldn't have seen it. He just would have fallen into it. Mm-hmm. Seeing it means he notices.
Right.
So he came face to face with his own evil at that point.
So considering that maybe I should just.
So it could be that he therefore felt that he should let things happen. At this point, because cutting himself down would have been to run away,
right?
So it could be now. It could be he didn't realize he'd be killed, and maybe he'll be captured. But he understood that I've got to stop. So I don't know if it was a complete tshuva, partial tshuva, but there certainly is a recognition of the evil. And you know, of course, that recognizing that we're doing something wrong is the first step. If a person doesn't even recognize they're doing something wrong, then they can never do tshuva.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.